In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Kiss excellence.
Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back in to another edition, another episode of the Sports Hour. It's good to be here, Mitch. You sounded like a race car on that one. I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I had something stuck in the back of my throat. I went a little higher pitch than I wanted to. Strained the vocal cords a little bit. Didn't stretch out properly before the whoa, so.
Yeah, you feeling good? You're not going to have...
I'm feeling great.
Like, tomorrow, you're going to be super sore. You're going to be like, dang it.
Nah.
Should stretch that out more.
Yep, I just got to stretch out a little bit more, man. Get the vocal cords moving a little bit more.
That's right, all. Right. All right, well, I thought you sounded great. Just
thanks.
Little race car vibes. That's fine.
Oh.
What do we got in store today?
Let's see. World Series starts tonight. So we got to talk about that. We got to talk about the finish up of the NL and ALCS series. I know you were excited about the conclusion of a particular one of those series.
Yes,
World
big
Series
race
game
fan.
One. Yeah, big race fan. That's exactly what it is. But game one World Series right now, it is 0-0 bottom third. We'll get into that just a little bit. We're going to go do a little NFL Week 5 recap, talk about some of the games that stood out to us the most. And then we have our quick picks to wind up the day. Some pretty straightforward episode. We get not a whole lot of variance today. We're staying kind of on task, as if you will.
Yeah, no frills. Just straight meat and potatoes.
Just it's a meat and potatoes blue collar kind of episode. That's what we're getting at here today.
Yeah, you know, it's like it's a stew kind of time of year, you know?
Almost.
People start, well, maybe not for you in California, but over here in Utah, we're starting to get into some stew and sweater weather. Wow, that's
yeah, it was
like a
it was 91
twister.
Degrees today, so
yeah, you're like, I don't know about stew, man.
I am ready for stew and sweater weather, but it stays hot for a long time over here, so.
Alright, well, in my neck of the woods, we're a little in the fall, right? So we're gonna give a little meat and potatoes. Let's dive into this World Series, Mitch. Let's just start.
That's meat and potato talk, baby.
Yeah, let's just start with my Dodgers, because why not? Listen, I was telling my wife this this morning. We were sitting here drinking our sipping our coffees, and I was like, you know, a week ago today, I was ready to give up on baseball completely. And I voiced that to you last week, and you thought I was absurd, and rightfully so. Listen, like a week ago, I was ready to give up on the entire sport and disavow my fandom of the Dodgers, and I woke up this morning. And had 100% confidence that the Dodgers were going to win the World Series this year. Like, I have already, like, we can hang the banner now. Like, it's already over. I've already accepted that we've won it. And it's just amazing to have experienced such a turnaround, such a turn of events in just 7 days. It's been an incredible ride, incredible journey.
Yeah. Guys come back down from 3-1 in a series. I don't know how many times a team has come back from 3-1, but it's not often, especially after that game 5 or game 4 shellacking of 10-2. I mean, you were really down after that game as well. That was last Thursday. Dodgers did what the Dodgers do, though. They get hot and they start winning games when they need to, and they pull off a comeback. Game 7, winning that game 4-3. Cody Bellinger, the big homer, popping his shoulder out of socket while celebrating. Yeah. And then continuing to finish the game. Just a job well done by Dave Roberts and the Los Angeles Dodgers. The right team in the NL is in the World Series. As far as the team that made it from the AL, that is extremely debatable. But they have played better than most in their league this year. So I guess there's some deserving factor for the Rays to be in the World Series right now.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but before we get into the Rays, I'm not done gushing about my favorite baseball team. But I do have thoughts on what you said here. So I just want to make sure that we get back to that statement later, that I think they are probably the best team in the AL. And I don't like how iffy that is. But again, with the Dodgers, you're absolutely right. This was the best team in baseball all year and the best team in the NL. And the Braves gave them all that they could. You go up 3-1. This was still a young and a team gaining experience. And this reminds me of what the Dodgers went through in 2015 in a tough series against the eventual champs. 2016, in a tough series against the eventual champs, Chicago Cubs. Dodgers had to kind of get to that hump of the NLCS and lose it that next year, and the year following, they were able to break through and get to the World Series. And I see this as maybe that experience for the Braves. You know, maybe this is going to propel them forward so that next year, when they're able to get back to this stage, they don't fall short. They're able to push through. It's a very talented team, and I was extremely impressed. Have been for a few years now, and it seems like they're just kind of ahead of schedule, maybe more than I would have anticipated. So, shout out to Atlanta and the Braves. It's tough for Atlanta. They've suffered so much, they're sports fans. To blow another lead, you know, this time a 3-1 lead in a series, it's a tough break. But you're playing the best team in baseball. Tip your cap to what the Dodgers are able to do, and know that your team's going to build upon this experience, and you have a great thing running down there in Atlanta, no doubt.
You didn't have to do it to him with the blow in the lead thing.
Well, let's not pretend I'm the first one to point this out, all right?
You didn't. I
saw the graphics on Twitter after they blew the lead the whole time.
Have a little respect. Come on now. I mean, this team
played disrespectful.
This team played
LA tough. The truth. I did. Okay. Listen. I could have done that way more disrespect, and I did not. I was not intending to. I'm praising the Atlanta Braves for how good they looked.
Saying,
I think they're a year away from the World Series. What do you mean disrespect?
I'm just saying he didn't have to do it to him. You know, that's all I'm saying.
Okay, let's not like. I
City's
didn't just
been through
shit
enough.
On him. Come
City's
on.
City's been through enough, Dallin. That's what
okay.
I'm saying.
Okay, how sensitive are we in 2020? I can't even bring up the fact that they have a checkered past.
I'm not
of
sensitive.
Leads.
I'm just looking out for the city of Atlanta.
Just,
is all. That's
if
all
I
I'm
even
doing.
Just mention that, I'm dogging them. Come on.
I'm just looking out for the city of Atlanta.
Okay,
is all. That's all I'm doing. I'm just looking out.
Listen,
I'm like an honorary peace officer in Atlanta. I'm just looking out for
okay.
Make sure everyone's staying okay,
listen,
staying happy.
I,
and I think you did it to him a little too hard there.
I said everything I said with the utmost respect because I really do think this
28-3
Braves team is very
spot,
good.
Though.
Listen, no, stop dwelling on this. This Braves team's very good. They're probably a year away from the World Series. I was very impressed. The Dodgers, the best team in baseball, best team in the NL. They deserve to be there. And they're going to win this World Series, no doubt in my mind. Mitch, let's talk about the AL.
I love that your button's a little bit easier to push today. That's cool.
I'm feeling a little like testy. I don't know, man.
I'm saying, I'm the one that's got the quick button, and I gave you a little hard time. And
I was just trying to praise a team I thought had a very respectable series. And
they
I just
did.
Didn't appreciate that.
I just
the
didn't think you had to bring up 28-3 like that. That's all I'm saying.
All right. I didn't
saying.
Even mention 28-3. I just said they blown leads.
You insinuated. You insinuated.
Of course. All right. Listen. Okay. Let's move on. Can we talk about the Rays? Because I disagree, Mitch. I think this really was the best team in the AL all year. They had the best record. They were the number one seed. They dominated. That first round matchup. Against the Blue Jays, you know, a tough draw with the Yankees. They win it in 3-2. A tough draw with the Astros. They win it in 7. You know what I mean? What else did they need to do to prove to you that this was the best team in the AL?
I don't know. Maybe it's just that it feels weird that the Tampa Bay Rays are in a World Series. Maybe
that's just
what it is.
That's just big market bias right there. What, it doesn't feel right if it's not the Yankees?
Oh, big market bias. Big market bias. Don't tell
Red
that to
Sox,
an A's
what,
fan, you nut job. What are you talking about? You tell big market bias to an A's fan?
I love
fan?
How easy
are you out
it
of your
is
skull?
To push your buttons.
Well, you know that's a hot one for me, and you went right. You Listen, know the hot right, button. You went right. there, just jammed down on it.
I was just trying. No, to it's get not my big market in, bias. Right? Listen, I think that's unfair. I think most baseball fans would agree with you, but I think that's unfair. Like, the Rays were a really good team this year. They are built very similar to the way that the Dodgers are, you know, in a lot of similar ways. The difference being the Dodgers have the star power at the top, but, you know, structure-wise, the way they view their pitching staffs, they have a great bullpen, extremely solid starters, and a fantastic defense, very much like the Dodgers. They hit for power. Like, this is a really fun matchup, and I think, like I said, with what they had to go through to get to the World Series, there's no doubt in my mind that the Rays are the best team. No doubt.
I don't know. I think there's some... did they play the best out of every team this year? Absolutely. I just think structurally there are better teams that I don't think maybe won as many games. I know that sounds weird.
Like who?
Like, I really like the Chicago White Sox. I think the Chicago White Sox are a very well-built team.
Yeah, but they're a fun, young, fun team that... is years away. They're what the Braves were a few years ago. Like, that's not a World Series contending team. That's not the best team in the league.
They had a tough draw in Oakland first round. They almost won that series, by the way. Thank God they didn't. But I think that team's better built than Tampa Bay is.
How can you say that when Tampa Bay won 40 games in the regular season? Got Chicago their way through the Yankees and the Astros and won and are now in the World Series.
It's not like that much of
a
difference.
And the White Sox couldn't get past the A's.
Oh,
you legitimately think they're a better team. I'm just shocked by that.
I don't know. I like the White Sox, man. I think
you can like them, but that doesn't mean that they're better right now. Like, let's be honest.
You're going to honestly sit here and tell me that the New York Yankees aren't as good a team as the Tampa Bay Rays.
No, because the Rays beat them. The Rays beat them. If the Yankees were a better team, they would have beat them. And I think that might be
even
easy to
as injury laden as the Yankees were. Healthy Yankees and healthy Rays team. You think the Rays are a better built team than the New York Yankees?
You cannot compare healthy to healthy because ultimately,
yeah, you can.
Because
both rosters at their fullest potential.
Because ultimately in sports, injuries are a factor, and sometimes one team is more injured than the other. Injuries are fair. They're not biased. They affect everybody. Sometimes it's superstars. Sometimes it's nobodies. It doesn't matter. It's not, you know, particular to team. It is what it is. So that is how sports work. We have to compare teams how they are, not how they could be. That's not real sports.
So one of the factors to whether a team is good or not is whether or not they suffered more injuries than another team. Is that what you're getting at?
No,
because
I'm
if the New York Yankees are fully healthy, they are winning this division. I'm just saying that outright. They're winning
So what you're saying is that the Rays might be the best team in person, but in theory, the Yankees are a better team. Well, that just doesn't make sense because they could be the best team in any theory, but in practice, they weren't this year. It was the Rays. The Rays had the best regular season record in the AL, and they made their way to the World Series. Like, I don't understand how hard this is.
I don't think it's that
like,
cut
they
and
were
dry.
Clearly the best
I think
team.
It's that cut and dry. I don't think it's that cut and dry. Because Oakland had the best record in the AL well past the halfway point. They suffered an injury, lose big, big piece, Matt Chapman. And they still wound up with, the third best record in the AL, but... I mean, just basing it off whether you won more games or not just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Right, but we're talking about winning more games in the regular season and in the postseason. Like, it's not just regular season. Like, they made their way through the postseason and won every series against the teams that we would expect to be in that conversation, and they beat them to get there. So, like, I don't, like, when you couple that with having the best record in the AL, I just don't understand.
They're really not well. Yeah, they've played really well during the postseason
and in the regular season.
The other team and they played very well during the regular season.
So, but they're not the best
team. Didn't I still don't think they're the best team.
They were the best team in the regular season. They were the best team in the postseason. But somehow, when you put them together, not the best team. It's fine. Listen, the Rays undoubtedly deserve to be here, and I think this is a fun matchup. Listen, Astros Dodgers would have been, for obvious reasons, extremely intriguing. But I didn't want to see those cheaters in the World Series. So I'm glad they're not there. And again, I think this Rays and Dodgers matchup, these are teams that are built in very similar ways. I think we're going to see fantastic pitching. I think we're going to see fantastic defense. It's going to be a matter of whose lineups are able to get more off of these starting pitchers. Who's going to make the other team get to their bullpen quicker and make that and have that quick leash. I think that's going to determine who can win this series. Ultimately, and obviously, I'm picking my Los Angeles Dodgers. And I'm going to say... five games. I think the Dodgers in five games. Mitch, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm taking the Dodgers in five as well. It's pretty clear cut and dry. I mean, this is by far the better team in this matchup, and I think the Dodgers, coming back from that 3-1 deficit in the prior series, have a ton of momentum, and I think that carries over to the World Series, and I like the Dodgers in five. Pretty easy pick. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I think, I saw this stat today. I mean, obviously the Dodgers are in their third World Series in 4 years. And of all the teams that have ever made three World Series in 4 years, there are only two teams to walk away from all those World Series and not have won one. And it's teams from like 1906 and like the 1910s. Like, no one's done it in 100 years. Like, I just feel, there's no way in my mind that the Dodgers get back to this stage finally and fall short again. I just can't, I can't process it. Maybe it's just the fan in me that says it like just isn't going to happen. So I'm just buying all in. But this is the year. The Lakers won it. The Dodgers are going to win it. It's like, it feels good. 1988 again.
1988 all over.
And that's it. And then we're good. So both of us Dodgers in five. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I'd say maybe six. I thought about Dodgers in six. Hey, the Rays are a good team. You know, they're going to be competitive, no doubt.
Yo, sure. Yeah, no, they will be competitive, but...
Yeah, so...
It's not that right, close to me.
Any other thoughts on the World Series, baseball as a whole, before we move to the NFL?
You know, not really. I'm just I'm happy that we're at this point where we actually get a World Series.
So, oh, yeah.
I don't think 6 months ago we would have thought we would have been here. So this feels pretty good to see a World Series and have fans in the stands. That's pretty neat too. So excited to see all this happen and unfold.
Yeah, no doubt. I definitely had my doubts, to say the least. I wasn't really impressed with Manfred now everything was dealt with. And the rolling out of the season, definitely was a little skeptic about how it all worked. But as you said... You know, it's gone well, and here we are in Texas playing this neutral site. As you said, fans in the stands, which is fun, and obviously limited, obviously distanced, masks, you know, the whole shebang. But, you know, congrats to Major League Baseball for being able to do this. I think the playoff bubbles was a very wise decision. Once you could limit the amount of teams, you could kind of, you know, do it at, you know, certain venues and limit that and create a bubble sort of atmosphere. That's smart. And I think it's, you know, obviously it's gone well enough. They have made it to the World Series and no COVID scares throughout the postseason. And that's a big positive.
Absolutely.
So absolutely. I did want to bring one thing up. I saw this today. Rob Manfred did some interviews, did some with the Associated Press today, just talking about a handful of things. And he said he hopes to keep two of this year's new sort of innovations changes. He said he's a fan of the expanded playoffs, and he's a fan of starting extra innings with runners on second base. When talking about the expansion of playoffs, he said, I like the idea. He says, I don't think we would do 16 like we did this year. I think we do have to be cognizant of making sure that we preserve the importance of our regular season. But I think something beyond the 10 that we are at would be a good change. So I just wanted to know your thoughts, because we've talked about this a handful of times. Now we have basically gone through the Major League playoffs. We're in this final round. The 16 teams... I think the extra round is a good idea. I don't know if we need all the teams there per se. I think first, you know, buys for the first one or two seeds is fair and makes sense. What do you think about the future of expanded playoff expansion and whether you think it should stick past this season?
Well, you and I talked about this, how we thought that we liked the format given the situation that we're in this year. We thought it was going to be a really fun format, a fair format. But we also both said that 16 teams from 10 teams was a very extreme change.
Right.
And so we couldn't see the 16 sticking. I like the idea of 12. I think 12 is a good number. You can add the extra round in still doing that. Now, obviously, there are fewer teams in that extra round, but you can add that extra three-game series at the beginning. I like that a lot better than the one-and-done game.
No doubt. No doubt. The three-game series, much more compelling.
Especially since my Oakland A's have been burned in one-and-done games like four times in the last decade. But I like the expansion for a bigger playoff field. I do agree with, and I don't agree with a lot with, I don't agree a lot with what Rob Manfred says. I think he's a bum. But he does make a good point in keeping the integrity of the regular season, because baseball, though it is an extremely long season, it is about the grind.
Right.
It's about grinding out all those games, and how much important after you've been grinding it out, the dog days really matter. And who's got enough fortitude at the end of the year to push themselves into the postseason? They have to keep that sanctity and that importance of their regular season. I do agree with him there. 16 would be an extreme change, but I do like the idea of adding the extra wild card and having a 12-team field going in, moving forward. I like that a lot.
Yeah, no doubt. I agree with you, and I think I like the added round. I like that it's three games. I think that's fun. It doesn't add too much, but adds enough. It gives lower seeds an opportunity, but not a huge advantage, right? Now, how does that work in a year where you're traveling back and forth ballpark to ballpark? I don't know. Does that team even get a home game? You know, does the lower seed even get one, or is it three home games for the top seed? Maybe that's the case, because the logistics of, you wouldn't be able to play a game every day if you're traveling back and forth. They'd be, so it'd take a week to play three games. Maybe that's not ideal. So maybe that has to be figured out. But I'm 100%. And Manfred, before the pandemic, mentioned that he supported the idea of expanding to 14 teams. Now, obviously, for the pandemic, it was 16 this year. But yeah, I think 12, 14, a way to find that wild card round that we had this year with three games, a way for that to become a permanent staple and involve more teams. But I agree that anything more than 14, makes the words that he used, the integrity of the regular season and how important that grind and that trial of endurance is over 162 games. 100% with you there. As far as the extra innings, runner on second, I'm kind of indifferent about it, if I'm being honest. I don't really care either way. I think it's fine. I know the longest game they had this year so far is 13 innings. So obviously, it worked. We didn't get any crazy long games. But I don't know if I care either way, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I'm pretty I lean more towards the let's just keep it the way it was and not screw with putting the runner on second base. And I don't really have a good reason why. I don't have a good reason why
You're a traditionalist, and I can understand. Yeah. I understand both sides, because yeah, it should prevent from these super long games.
If I were going to give it any props about it, I mean, it did do what it was designed to do, which was speed up the game. Which
exactly.
Major League Baseball has gotten a lot of flack about over the last 15 years is the pace of play has been way too slow. It did what it was supposed to do. I just don't know if I'm really a fan of that. But at the same time, if they were to do it, I don't think I would make a big stink about it,
Right. Like it wouldn't be offended
too much.
Right.
Right. It wouldn't be offended, but I wouldn't be a fan of it at the same time. You know what I mean? So
sure. It feels kind of weird. Like it just feels weird to throw a batter out there on second, but I understand it. And like you said, it works. So I would understand if baseball was like, listen, we really need to move forward with this, because 17 inning games are just not beneficial. You know.
So
yeah,
now here's my question is, and I guess maybe I just didn't pay attention to how this works. If you put the runner on second base, is that player now entering the game, thus ineligible to re-enter at a different time?
I wasn't sure how that worked.
Or is he a courtesy runner where he can re-enter and play an actual three-out spot?
From my understanding, and again, I didn't like pay attention to extra inning games and stuff like that, but I believe that it's that it is like a courtesy runner. I don't think, if I remember right, that it's somebody off the bench. It's somebody that's already been playing in the game that they actually just, I think they just put up to bat or on the base. Obviously, they wouldn't be able to come up. I'm not, now that I'm talking through this, I don't know if I really know.
Yeah, I mean, I could see how it'd be a courtesy, like the courtesy runner thing wouldn't bother me. If it was a player entering the game and then once he has scored, he is now ineligible to re-enter the game. That I would have a problem with.
Well, that just wouldn't make sense, because then in extra innings, you're forcing everybody
you're
off the bench.
You're forcing to use your bench. Right. Yeah.
So that's probably not the case. It's probably, as you mentioned earlier, like a courtesy runner sort of thing. But basically, you and I are both on, don't really care either way. Not super for it, but not super against it.
Yeah.
If it works for baseball and it does what they need it to do, then like it is what it is. Like I'll live with it.
And look, I love baseball, and I know baseball has dropped in popularity over the last few years. And so if they can make changes that's going to bring the sport back in the right direction towards where it was in the late 90s, early 2000s, I'm all for it.
Right.
I just think, you know, I think some of these changes are just going to be hard to adjust to at first. But if it's for the better of the sport, the betterment of the sport, I'm all for it. So,
sure. And I think a great example of that for me is the three batter rule for relief pitchers. I'm like, I don't know. Like, do we really need that? But I actually really like that. I think it adds a level
well,
of
it killed,
more.
It killed it adds an entire different bullpen spot. It killed the left-handed specialist. I mean,
right, but I think it's added a level of strategy to the game as far as when you bring players in. You can't just bring anybody in whenever you want. You have to plan it out a little bit more. It allows, you know, for the offense to set up lineups in certain ways to not give clear advantages when you bring somebody in. I like that change, but at first I maybe was more hesitant till I saw it in action. So for me, I'm a fan of it. I like it, but, you know, wasn't something I was thinking about like, hey, you know, we need to change that.
We've seen guys in this postseason because of that rule. The first one that comes to mind for me, because I watched all those games, was Liam Hendricks, the A's closer. He had to get 8 outs on 2 different occasions in that postseason because they're saving pitchers because they know, you know, they know if they get to a certain point, they don't want to run out of arms. So they're now that closer is having to get 7-8 outs. This might even change how the back end of the bullpen has how many outs they're going to be required to get, because you can't just send a setup guy to go and get 2 outs. He has to face 3 batters.
Right.
So it does. You're right there. It's a new level of strategy, and I liked it. I liked it. I didn't hate it, but.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Mitch. As we wrap up baseball here, just want to give a little update. We're recording this Tuesday night live. Dodgers, Cody Bellinger just hit a 2-run homer. So Dodgers up 2-0, so feeling good so far. You've already known the outcome of this when you're listening. So if the Dodgers end up losing like 11-2, please don't laugh at me at this point in the podcast when you're like, oh,
tweet at him at Little Point and laugh.
Right. Right. Be like, remember when they're up 2-0? Idiot. Somebody tweet that at me, please. All right, Mitch, dumbass. NFL, we are in week 6 this past weekend.
Yes.
Wow, that's flying weird. By, feels like.
I know, crazy. It's gone by so quick. It's gone by incredibly quick.
Yeah, it really has. We have the Sports Hour Bowl this week, the Bears at the Panthers, in what was a pretty good game. A pretty good game, a tough defensive battle. Bears prevail on the road 23-16, proved a 5-1 on the season. Mitch, your thoughts on this game?
I was the happiest guy in Northern California about this Bears game. I'll tell you that much. not so much that we just won, but also that we made your Carolina Panthers look silly. We made you look silly.
Well, so I don't think anybody looks. I don't think anyone looked silly.
I don't know. I don't know. Offensively, still figuring some things out. Nick Foles wasn't good. 23 for 39, 198. A touchdown. He had the pick. David Montgomery struggled on the ground a little bit, but this defense has looked so good, especially against the Carolina offense that has looked pretty decent.
Yeah, they were top six,
the,
I think,
over
in the NFL.
Previous few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I'm a firm believer in this Bears defense. I think that Chuck Pagano is doing a fantastic job with this group of guys. And I couldn't be happier with the outcome. I guess the inaugural Sports Hour Bowl goes to the Chicago Bears. Rub 1-0 on you so far.
Yeah, I guess so. I do want to talk about Chicago here for a second. I'm going to give you a fair assessment, Mitch. Okay. To be objective here when I say this, because I watched the whole game. I saw what the offense looked like, what the defense looked like, you know, how the flow of the game. This defense is a playoff defense, no doubt. This is a defense that's going to wreak havoc throughout the season and into the playoffs. But this offense is not going to win a playoff game dinking and dunking its way to, you know, 20 points every game and just hoping the defense can hold on for dear life, because they're going to play better offenses than the Carolina Panthers. Carolina Panthers don't have a good offensive line. They have looked very good this whole season, but they haven't really faced a truly good defense until the Chicago Bears. They played the Bucks, but that was week two. It's a little different. And they didn't have a good game that day either. They lost that game as well. So I worry about that for Chicago long term. I think this is like a 10-6 playoff team, and I think the defense is going to keep them in this whole season. But Nick Foles, I don't think, attempted a pass beyond like 2 yards past the line of scrimmage. It was swing patches and 5-yard hitches. They couldn't run the ball, and you could tell how one-dimensional it was when they're just dinking 3, 4, 5 yards out, trying to just chew clock and keep, you know, the defense rested and play ultimately a game of field position, which is what this game ended up being. A game where Chicago was starting at the 30 and the 40, and Carolina was starting at the 10 or the 15. So I was impressed by Chicago's defense, no doubt. I was impressed by Carolina's defense, which actually played pretty well in this game. Forced 3 turnovers. Really, you know, at times looked equally matched in some ways to what Chicago was doing. But I think this is a playoff team, and I was not high on them going into this season. You know that. I still am not convinced on offense. I think the offense could lose them some games. But if the defense keeps playing like this, you guys will get there. I just don't know if this offense can win you a game in the playoffs.
You know, Dallin, I'm going to be just real and honest with you too. You're not alone in that vote. Yeah. This offense does worry me as well. It does, and it goes back to the quarterback play. Now, look. Does that mean that I'm calling for Mitchell Trubisky to be back under center? Absolutely not. I'm calling for a Matt Stafford trade within the division. I think Chicago needs to make a move for Matt Stafford.
Wow.
I think we need a guy. Look, there's already been talks about Matt Stafford in Detroit. Maybe there's a trade coming up. I know the big team in that conversation has been Dallas, but Chicago needs a good, reliable quarterback, someone that is a battle tested passer who can put the ball up down the field. Stafford has the big arm still. I mean, he's still not that old. He's what, like 32, 33? I mean, it's not like he's been around forever. I just looked at his age, I think, not that long ago, and I was like, wow, he's still that young. And it's because he came into the league so young. I think he was like 21 when he got drafted. The Bears need to make a move for Matt Stafford, and I'm calling for it because I think that's the only way that we can really improve this offense, give David Montgomery the opportunities that he needs. Is if we have someone that's actually a threat to throw the football, then it's going to open up your run game a heck of a lot more. And there's the weapons. The weapons are there in Chicago. I mean, Allen Robinson. Jimmy Graham has played well for the old fart that he is. Cole Kmet showed some flashes this week. Cordarrelle Patterson can stretch the field. Anthony Miller hasn't ever lived up to the hype, but I think he still has the talent if he has the right guy throwing him the football. The Bears need to make a move for Matt Stafford, and I think that's going to be the thing that puts them over the edge. I'm on board with you. They're going to be a playoff team. I think 10-6, 11-5 is the realistic thing right now because they still have some winnable games coming up in their schedule. But yeah, we need to make a move for something, for someone else under center.
Yeah, I just, you know, I look at the Bears, and they are 5-1, and they lead the division, and that's great and all, but they started off with the Lions, the Giants, and the Falcons, and they won all those games by 4 points against the Lions, the Giants, and the Falcons. Like, we know how bad those teams are, right? They lose to the Colts 19-11, and then the defense puts up two back-to-back great performances against the Bucks and the Panthers. They win those games, but Bears are going to have a streak where they're at the Rams on what I believe is Monday night.
Yes,
Monday night. I don't know how much this necessarily proves for Chicago, but I think these next 3 weeks are going to be very indicative of how good this team is with finally, you know, a series of challenging opponents.
But very similar to that team where the offense was the big question mark. The defense was cut, you know, clear cut dry. Everybody knows Chicago has a great defense. It was the offense that was the question mark. And a very similar to that team. And that's what makes me nervous is I see a lot of similarities to that team from 2 years ago. So, but yeah, I know an in-division trade with the Lions is going to be really hard to pull off, but that's what I'm calling for.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that would be surprising. I don't know. I think if Detroit loses that game last week, maybe, but they did win. So they're sitting at 2-3. And maybe now sure. You're like, well, you know, one more win and all of a sudden we're 500 and then, you know, one win. You know, it's like, I think there's still some time in the season. If they fell to 1-4. That when Chicago and Dallas calls, maybe they listen. So they might be a couple weeks away from that. Would be interesting, and I think quarterback is ultimately what's going to hold this team back, and you know, maybe Foles gets better, maybe this offense can open up more, but I was just not impressed. Just seemed like the offense was on the field to survive, not to attack, and you're not going to win playoff games surviving, you know. So
right,
let's talk about a team that was attacking on offense, Mitch. That's the Tennessee Titans. And they won a game in overtime against the Houston Texans. Listen, the Texans aren't good, but this Houston Titans, oh my goodness. These Tennessee Oilers, these Tennessee Titans, they're impressive on offense. First duo in NFL history, a passer with 350 yards and a rusher with 200 yards. And that was Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry. 212 and two touchdowns for Henry, 364, four touchdowns and a pick. For Ryan Tannehill, and like quietly, these Tennessee Titans are 5-0. Mitch, what do you make of the Titans, and why haven't we been giving them more credit?
I think it's because we had so many years of 6-10, 7-9, 8-8, that now we see them at 5-0, and we're like, oh crap, this is like Steve McNair Titans, where like they're actually really good, and. You look at the way they're being coached too. Mike Vrabel is Bill Belichick Jr. He is absolutely just he's finding the loopholes within the rules. He's coaching this team fantastically. I mean, who the hell is Anthony Firkser? 8 for 113 and a touchdown. Never heard of the guy before this week. It's the next man up. Who's gonna step up and be the big play guy this year? And Derrick Henry. I mean. Just before I move on to Ryan Tannehill, let's give Derrick Henry the props. I mean, how many 200 yards rushing games has this guy had in the last 16 games?
Oh, it's incredible.
It seems like every other week he's putting up 200 on the ground, and he's just fantastic. 22 for 212 and two on the ground. And Jeremy McNichols, only 5 touches, but over 10 yards a carry. He actually ran the ball really well as well. Ryan Tannehill, though, I want to give you these stats. I'm going to say this right now. Over the last 16 NFL games played, Ryan Tannehill is the MVP of this league. He is the MVP of this league. Do you want his statistics to help you prove this? Help me prove this.
Are you asking me? Oh, okay.
I'm asking you.
I'm like, sorry, well, yeah. Yes, I want the statistics. Of course I do.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I'm going to say this. Over the last 16 games played in the NFL for the Tennessee Titans, Ryan Tannehill is the MVP. This is dating back to last year. He's thrown for over 4,000 yards. He's thrown 35 touchdowns and only 8 interceptions while completing 70% of his passes and has a quarterback rating in the 115 range.
Wow.
He has 117.5 at the end last year, 113.5 so far this year. He's averaging over 250 yards a game. This guy, with young weapons, young unproven weapons, is carrying this team right now. Now, Derrick Henry, you could say the team has been on his shoulders, but Ryan Tannehill has just as much of a role in carrying this team as Derrick Henry does. And Ryan Tannehill, to me, over the last 16 games, has been the MVP of this league, and it's not even close.
Yeah, I mean, when you look back at what they were able to pull off in the second half of last season, and then obviously, you know, what they were, 9-7, they make the playoffs, but two big-time playoff wins over the Patriots and the Ravens. They were up big in the AFC Championship game against the Chiefs. And then, you know, I think I expected them to be good, but I didn't know how good. But this year, they just haven't slowed down. They've just continued to do what they did at the end of last year, which is, you know, when you mention the last 16 games played, we're talking about the last, you know, 11 games of last season and the first five of this year. And, I mean, the Titans, I just didn't know if this was replicable, right? And clearly 5-0 is a lot better than they were last year. They were 9-7. But this team is really good and scary in the AFC. You look at how many competitive teams there are. And they're right up there with some of these best teams. And it just shows how talented the NFL is when a team like the Titans doing everything that they're doing, we just are overlooking them. But we wanted to give them their due here on this podcast. Make sure we talk about them. Extremely impressive start. And they're in for a tough matchup themselves this week, which we'll get to in quick picks, but another undefeated team.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to give Ryan Tannehill that shout-out because we've been talking about Russell Wilson and Josh Allen this whole year. No one's talking about Ryan Tannehill. 13 touchdowns, 2 picks.
Yeah, I mean, Russell Wilson's
for
the MVP,
just under 1,400 yards.
Clear to me, but Tannehill should get some more respect. You're absolutely right, Mitch.
We're not even talking about the guy. No one's talking about the guy. So
yeah, well, we thought the whole team had COVID for like 2 weeks. They didn't play a game.
We did. And to come off of that after having no practices and, you know, missing a week, coming back these last 2 weeks and playing that the way they have is just, it's
just goes to show that practice doesn't matter. You don't need it.
Okay, Allen Iverson, take it easy.
What's practice? All right, speaking of the team, the Titans will be facing this Sunday. That's the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they had a tough matchup on Sunday. 4-1 Cleveland Browns at home for the Steelers, and wow, they handled them 38-7. Baker did absolutely nothing, and no Nick Chubb, but this incredible run game for the Cleveland Browns was just non-existent on Sunday against one of the best defenses in the league in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh did enough on offense, took advantage of how well their defense played and rode them to a 38-7 win, Mitch. I want to say this briefly. I think what this says about the Cleveland Browns is that they're probably a good team. They may even be a playoff team, but they're not an elite AFC team because the two games where they've lost and they've looked awful are the two teams that they played elite AFC teams. Elite AFC North teams. The Ravens and the Steelers have embarrassed them both times. Other than that, they looked good. So I think the Browns are good, but they're just proves that they're not at the big boys table yet. The Steelers, though, I think they're there, Mitch.
I want you to admit you were wrong about the Steelers.
Oh, yeah. No. I was 100% wrong about the Steelers this year. And I even said this when we did our you know, our big mega-sode preview of the NFL season, I said I was low on the Steelers. I was very low. And I kept talking about how everybody was hyping up the Steelers and all the offseason was, listen, Steelers are going to be really good. Big Ben's going to come back. This defense is incredible. The offense just needs to be, you know, like above average and this team's going to be great. And I didn't buy it. I didn't. I was like, you know what? I want to wait. I would rather wait and see and be wrong on the Steelers than jump on this hype train and be embarrassed that I just believed everybody else because I didn't buy it myself. So I did not jump on the hype train and that was a wrong decision. I'm okay with admitting that, but I was just not convinced that the Steelers were just suddenly going to be good, that the formula, that it was that easy. But apparently it is, because this defense is really good, and, you know, there's enough offensive weapons. I don't know what the rest of the season looks for them.
Yeah, I think what this says about the Browns for me is that it's along the lines of actually what you just said. This is a good team that has playoff potential, but when that creativity we talked about last week gets in the way and they're having an off night, it's going to look really bad.
Right.
And I think that it got in their way last week. I think with a team like Pittsburgh, they're so dynamic offensively. I mean, those edge guys that they have in Pittsburgh are unbelievable. Cameron Hayward, Bud Dupree, TJ Watt, This defense is Stephon Tuitt in the middle. This team is so good defensively that I think creativity can get cute sometimes, Dallin. And I think the Cleveland Browns were starting to get a little cute, and Pittsburgh said, hey, we're just going to ground you guys a little bit. Makes me look like a dummy saying that the Browns are going to make this tough for the Steelers or the Ravens to win that division, like I said last week. But I think you're right where the Browns are. They're a good team. They have playoff potential, but they could get in their own way, I think, is what it's really going to come down to. The Steelers, man, I'll tell you what. This I like this team a lot. I know Big Ben didn't contribute in a whole lot in this game. He was 14 for 22 for 162, but he's proven he can still get the job done, and James Conner had a 100-yard game and a touchdown. Actually ran the ball extremely well. Receiving wise, who is the number one in this offense?
Doesn't matter.
I'm confused.
It's whoever, however it works.
Some weeks it looks like Deontay Johnson. Some weeks it looks like Chase Claypool. Then it's like, oh well, is it still Juju? No, he's definitely the number two. James Washington had a pretty good game this week. I mean, it's who's the number one here, and you're exactly right. I don't think it really matters. I think it's whoever they pick that week to be the number one, they're going to be just fine.
Yeah, it's whoever's open, whoever the game flows. And I think that, you know, it just shows how much talent they have in that receiving core. You know, when the fourth best receiver is like James Washington or Deontay Johnson, right? Like, or Chase Claypool, like which one of those guys is the fourth best guy? I don't know. Like that's pretty good. And they've
sometimes
shown it
they're
this
the number
year.
One in that offense too. I mean, sometimes they're the number one in that offense
exactly.
That week. I mean, Chase Claypool, I love watching that kid play. He is so talented. Love watching that kid play.
Yeah, Steelers look legit, and I will say this again, and not to pick on this team may be the same way that I did the Bears, but you look at their early season slate, played the Giants, the Broncos, the Texans, the Eagles. Okay. That's not, you know, no one's saying, wow, what a gauntlet. They got wins. They did what they needed to do. That was a very good showing against the Browns. They're going to be at the Titans, at the Ravens the next 2 weeks. Those are some big games. That's 5-0 Titans team. That's a Ravens team that you're competing with in the division. That's going to be a big game. I'm not saying the Steelers are going to the Super Bowl. I'm not jumping all the way there. I was obviously skeptical going in. I need to see more, but this defense is showing that it's going to keep this team around here. The offense has enough weapons to definitely compete if they need to. I think this is a team that's built in the right way to not only get to the playoffs, but even win some games.
Yeah, this is one of those teams I could see making a deep run. I really like this Steelers team right now.
Yeah,
handled their business
more.
This week.
All right, let's
handled
talk
their business.
Yeah, let's talk about another an undefeated team that lost this week. That was the Green Bay Packers taking on the Bucks, and Tom Brady at home out-duels, out-matches Aaron Rodgers and this Green Bay Packers team. Rodgers did not look good. Tampa Bay ran the ball incredibly well. The defense looked fantastic and really stifled an offense in Green Bay that nobody had been able to do anything with. Nobody had been able to stop Green Bay and what they had been doing this season. But Tampa Bay figured it out. Tampa Bay did it. You know, they had a pick six, two interceptions by Rodgers in the game. Only 201 total yards for Green Bay. And they pull out a 32-10 win at home. Mitch, what are your thoughts first off for the Packers here with this loss? What do you take from this?
I mean, it's just a blip in the radar. I still think this is a great team. I mean, when was the last time we saw Aaron Rodgers throw or complete under 50% of his passes?
Yeah.
I can't recall one.
He had a 17.8 QBR, but he was sacked four times, you know, hounded the whole time. You know, didn't have time to throw deep, didn't have time to do what they normally do. The run game wasn't great. Aaron Jones was 10 for 15.
Yeah, David Bakhtiari goes down. That's a huge hit for that offensive line. He wasn't protected very well. I just think this isn't – it didn't say much to me about the Packers. I think that I think every good team needs to get their ass kicked once.
No doubt.
And I think that this Packers team got their ass whooping this week. And I have no worries about this Packers team moving forward. I think they're still going to be a great team. You know, Aaron Rodgers did three pumps in the end zone there.
That was bad. Everything went downhill after that. So clearly that was a bad decision.
The football gods didn't like it. Hingle McCringleberry.
No, they did not. Because the rest of the game after that, he thought he scores. He doesn't actually score on that play. And then and then after that drive, they were shut out the rest of the game. And it was 38-0. So,
did not look good. Did not
but
look
hey, good. You live and you learn.
But really what this says to me, and the MVP of this game is Todd Bowles. Todd Bowles' defense that he has in Tampa Bay right now is business is booming in Tampa Bay as far as that defense goes. This defense is creating turnovers, making plays at an outstanding rate. Tom Brady didn't even have to do much. He only threw for 166. He had the two touchdowns. Ronald Jones ran the ball well.
It was a good day. I mean, 150 yards for the team on the ground. That's, you know, that you'll take that every day. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he looked great. The ground game looked great. Rob Gronkowski, welcome back to the NFL. Looked you know, a little bit like those old Patriot days with Brady and Gronkowski hooking up for a touchdown. Rob was 5 for 78 and a touchdown. But this defense, man, it's something else. And I love Todd Bowles. I think Todd Bowles deserves another head coaching opportunity in the NFL. And what he's doing with this defense is just next level. This is the best defense in the NFL. And Todd Bowles, stop shutting down Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, you get the MVP. You get the game ball for the game. I mean, Todd Bowles was fantastic in his play calling and his game scheming this week. This doesn't say a whole lot to me about what the Packers are as a team. It does say more to me what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are as a team, which is a dominant defense and doing enough on offense to put up a mass amount of points. You don't have to be flashy with your offense. You just go out and get the job done. And that's a Bruce Arians style team. That's really Bruce Arians style football right there, which is, you know, you're not flashy when you're putting 38 points up. You're just going out there and doing your job. And I like that. I like that a lot.
You need one game like this to kind of wake up. When you start off 4-0, you're feeling cocky. You need a wake up call. This is an okay one. You're on the road against Tom Brady and Tampa. It's a good team. This is the playoff team. You know, this is a team you might be facing in the playoffs later on. So it's a good test. You didn't show up, but you know, you got to come back and get this. But no, you're absolutely right. The MVP is Todd Bowles. I mean, 5 sacks, 8 tackles for loss, 13 QB hits. For this defense. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. 2 interceptions. I mean, when you do this to anybody, even if it is Aaron Rodgers, you're going to win, and you're going to win big, and that's what they did. I think this shows the type of ceiling of what Tampa Bay could be when you give Tom Brady this good of a defense, when you give him a consistent run game. You know, he's going to be efficient. He's not, you know, he's not going to do anything crazy. No turnovers, two touchdowns. He did what he needed to do, and they got a win. And that's it's as simple as that. And they got a big win against, you know, a fellow contender in Green Bay, knocked them off their undefeated season, and good for Tampa Bay. It's a good showing, especially after the Thursday night loss to Chicago, to bounce back with a win against, you know, another top team. Is good news for Tampa Bay.
Oh, definitely.
So
definitely.
Final game, Mitch, the early Monday night, the not actual Monday night, formerly Thursday night, moved to Monday afternoon game, the Kansas City Chiefs at Buffalo. A rainy affair, drizzly all day. Kansas City wins the game 26-17 on the back and shoulders of Clyde Edwards-Helaire and the Kansas City rushing offense. 245 yards on the ground for Kansas City. CEH had 161 himself. Mahomes, an efficient 21 for 26 and two touchdowns. And Kansas City gets the win here. I think, Mitch, much like, I guess, the game we just talked about, I think this means more for the victor than it does the loss for the Bills. I think for the Bills, it's two tough losses to the Titans and the Chiefs, respectively, but it shows that they're not. They haven't earned that title yet. They're a great, they're a really good team, but are they a top tier team? Maybe they had a setback like the Browns. Maybe it's, you know, maybe we're not quite there. Maybe we need to do more. Maybe we're still trying to grow into that. And, you know, we started off hot, but Patrick Mahomes proves to you that it's not all that easy. And I think the Chiefs just further proved why they're one of, if not the best team in the NFL, that they can win in any way. And if it means rushing the ball 250 yards, even Kansas City could do that if they need to do that to win. And that's what they did on Monday.
Yeah, by the way, 245 rushing yards for the Kansas City Chiefs. That is an Andy Reid offense record.
Wow.
There's not been an Andy Reid offensive coach team that has rushed for that many yards in the past.
Yeah.
So, this was a good win for the Kansas City Chiefs. They beat a tough Buffalo Bills team. And I look at this game very similar to what I did with Green Bay, Tampa Bay. The Bills are a really good football team that needed to get their ass kicked a couple times. They got their ass handed to them last week with Tennessee. And then they were just the victim of a tough draw playing the Chiefs the very next week.
Sure.
So, I think this is still a really good Bills team. I do think they're in that top tier as far as the AFC still is, at least for me. But they do have some kink. They still do have some growing to do. I think they just had a tough draw, and yeah, they got their ass kicked by the Titans, and then they wound up getting the Chiefs the next week, and that's a tough part of the schedule. But like you said, the Chiefs look fantastic against a Bills team that actually defensively has been pretty well, with the exception of last week against the Titans. Has played pretty well. Mahomes threw extremely efficiently, 21 for 26, 225 and 2. CEH, I don't know if this is going to be his last big week with Lev Bell coming in soon. I don't know how involved Lev Bell is going to be in that offense to start his tenure in Kansas City. But a good showing by Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And Chiefs did what they always do, which is go out and be efficient offensively. And then also playing out of the norm, really, for an Andy Reid run offense, which is dominate on the ground.
Yeah, because that's what the game dictated. It was really rainy. You could tell early these guys couldn't complete passes. Ball was very wet. So you stuck it on the ground. And good for Kansas City for proving that they could do it. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to have a role in this offense, regardless of Le'Veon Bell. He clearly proved that. And he's going to be the number one guy, in my opinion. I think Lev Bell will take on the Damian Williams role.
Yeah, I think Lev Bell, when he gets involved with this offense, he'll be more of the goal line carries. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has nine 10 zone touches over the first 6 weeks of the season, and he has right. a net gain of negative 1 yards. So he's definitely not a goal line guy. And I think Lev Bell adds that dimension to you because he's a very patient runner, and he has the ability to be a power runner and an elusive runner. So, and obviously what he adds to the pass game is going to be fantastic for this offense. But, yeah. Yeah, it felt like good fall football, too. Seeing that drizzly weather, it felt like fall football was finally here.
Sure, no doubt. And I think Lev Bell's going to be used a lot in this offense, even just as a decoy. You know, when you are going to line up Lev Bell and Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the same backfield with Patrick Mahomes and have guys moving around and you're faking options, RPOs or whatever, like you're just having another like a Lev Bell on the field is going to make the defense have to pay attention. And that's just going to add another act of deception and motion to this offense and even bigger mismatches. So it's going to be, listen, this offense is going to be fun with Lev Bell. They need to be able to establish a run game. And when you're 27th in the NFL, averaging 92 yards a game, that's not good enough. That's just not good enough. And Singletary and Moss and this offensive line, they've got to figure it out over the course of this season because they're not gonna be able to get to that 12-win threshold if the run game does pick up, and they're not going to be able to compete in the playoffs if they're just a one-dimensional team. So that would be my concern for the Bills moving forward, but plenty of time to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to highlight your star player, which is Josh Allen here, but it's another thing to put it completely on his back and not have complimentary pieces around him. The Devin Singletary and Zach Moss are talented running backs. They just need to find ways to get them more involved, maybe in some RPO stuff. It feels like they just need to be more involved in this. I don't know. It seems like, you know, even when they've run RPO stuff, Josh Allen is keeping on a lot of those. So, you know, maybe there's a trust issue there. Maybe that stuff needs to be ironed out to where, yeah, you can lean on Devin Singletary and Zach Moss. They'll help you get there. It may take some time to iron it out, but you have to be able to lean on those guys to help get the ball moving on the ground. So, yeah, I'm with you 100%. They have to figure out other ways and not be so one-dimensional.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt, Mitch. All right. Yeah, I mean, I think great win for the Chiefs. Still one of the best teams. Bills, they're going to be there. I look at them, though, in this week as maybe more closer to what the Browns experienced. I think the Bills are a better team than the Browns, but maybe this is a step back to say, are we really, you know, getting ahead of ourselves here? Are we really one of these top two, you know, tier teams? Or do we have more work to do to get there? And it doesn't mean that they can't, by the end of the season, be included with the Baltimores and the Kansas Cities and, at this point, Tennessee and Pittsburgh. But I think so far through this season, the way they fared against two of those teams, I think it's clear that maybe they're just not quite there yet. So, Mitch, any other thoughts on the NFL before we move to the quick picks?
Yeah, I do have one bit of news here. We found this out, I think, earlier today, or was it late yesterday? It's Tua time, baby.
It's Tua time. Oh, it feels good. It's Tua time.
The 3-3 Miami Dolphins making a pretty surprising move. Honestly, I thought it was surprising, a surprising move to move on from Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's played really well over the last few weeks, to bench him in favor of Tua Tagovailoa, their rookie quarterback, taken number 5 overall in this last year's draft, ready to move on to him. This team's 3-3, second in this division down. This team is playing well. Why would you move on now to your rookie quarterback when you're playing so well with Ryan Fitzpatrick?
It's very easy, Mitch. It's because it's a bye week. That's it.
Right.
You played 6 games of the season. You got to see Ryan Fitzpatrick. Listen, like you're right. They played well. And they're 3-3, and they're probably pleasantly surprised about that, right? They snuck out a game. They, you know, got lucky with an injured Niners team, a beat-up Niners team. They beat the Jets. They beat the Jags, the teams they're supposed to beat. They lost to the other teams that they're supposed to lose to. Is this team as good as their 3-3 record? Probably not. Are they a team that thinks that they're a legitimate playoff contender? No. I mean, they drafted where they did for a reason. And they secured Tua Tagovailoa for a reason, and that was to see if he's the starting franchise quarterback. And you got to give him an opportunity. And this is a great place to throw him in. Okay, you're not on a team that's 0-6. There's not going to be this pressure that all of a sudden you've got to win some games quick because we haven't won anything this year. You know, we're 1-5. We're 3-3. We're sitting in a good spot. You know, we've gotten lucky on some games. We've had some easy matchups. But Tua gets a whole bye week with prep. They'll come back again next week. They've got the Rams at home. That's a tough one. Cardinals, Chargers, Broncos, Jets. Those are the five games, the first five games for Tua. But this makes sense for me as timing. I know, Fitzpatrick has gone well, but you knew that you were moving on from Fitzpatrick to Tua at some point this season. So if not in the bye week win, and it wasn't going to be based on how good Ryan Fitzpatrick was playing unless you were 5-1. Unless you were just incredibly good, and there was no, logical reason to move on. So I'm on board with this. I think this makes sense, Mitch.
Yeah, I mean, I think we would have saw it a little bit later had it not been for the COVID rescheduling. Because their bye week was really supposed to be, week 10?
Right.
And those first three games out of the gate, week 11, 12, and 13, would have been Denver, the Jets, and then the Bengals. So three pretty easy matchups to go ahead and give your guy a good look. It's coming earlier now because the bye's been moved up because of the COVID rescheduling. So now we're seeing it earlier than what we thought. And you kind of thrown him to the wolves a little bit with the Rams. I mean, this is a good team. But I think it's going to be a really good
prep,
test.
Though, with 2 weeks
with
of
two
prep.
With 2 weeks of prep.
You know.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to shortchange him here. He gets 2 weeks of prep here. But it's going to be a tough first matchup for him, but then he does get the Chargers week 10, and then Denver, New York, and Cincinnati to follow. So I like the switch. I think it's going to be a good learning experience for Tua, and if it doesn't pan out, just go back to Ryan Fitzpatrick, I guess. But
they're not going to go back. There's no unless Tua is just absolutely horrible. You're not going to go back to Fitzpatrick. Like this
so
team isn't
this
a playoff
is a sink or
team.
Swim now. They're going sink or swim at 3-3.
Yeah, I mean, it's Tua for the rest of the season, and we'll go whatever we go. If it's 6-10, it's 6-10. If it's 8-8, it's 8-8, I think Miami just needs to commit to this. And I think they've seen at another position, I've noticed, they've bought into youth and given players a try at running back. They brought in Breida. They made a trade for him. They didn't really know where they were going to go at running back, but they've given Myles Gaskin the run, and Gaskin has been good. He's got 340 yards on the ground. He's got 27 catches for 182 yards. That's second on the team in receptions. They've given this young guy a go, and I think they're pretty happy with how he's played. I think Tua is going to be the same way. Even if it doesn't lead to winning, you got to give him a shot this year, and this seems like the right time to do it.
So if he goes out and throws four picks against the Rams, you think we see Tua the next week?
Oh, of course. No doubt. They would be the dumbest decision they could make would be to bench him.
I'm just saying.
You can't bench a guy after one game, his first career game.
Well, then maybe he's not ready. That's why I'm asking.
After one game, you can determine he's not. I don't know, Mitch. He'd have to look awful. Like he'd have to be the worst quarterback.
Well, I just said four picks. That's pretty awful.
Okay, I mean, but that it'd have to be he'd have to look like he was a high schooler playing college football for him to get benched the next game, Mitch. It's not going to happen. It'd be a horrible decision. Tua Tagovailoa is the starting quarterback for the rest of the season unless he gets injured. Sink or swim.
Okay. All right.
You can't take it back at this point or you're going to Josh Rosen him.
That's what I worry about is Josh Rosen because they kept playing him. And he still threw three picks a game, and then he's never panned out.
Right, but that was also a worse team. He was expected, I think more was expected from him. I mean, that team won, two games, three games? How many did the Cardinals win that year? They did not win many games. Miami's a better team than this. Two is in a better spot. I'm not worried about that. I mean, could you say the same thing about Herbert? I mean, they're not winning, but they're pretty happy with what they're getting from their rookie
experience. Yeah, but
Herbert's
not throwing four
gaining.
Picks a game. That's my point. Is Herbert's not? If a guy comes out and throws four picks a game, I mean, what does that do to his morale?
Well, okay, Mitch, you're suggesting that Tua is going to come out and throw four picks a game over the course of the season?
No, all I'm saying is, if he throws four picks against the Rams, do you go with him against Arizona?
Yeah, of course, you have to give him more than one game in his entire NFL career to judge whether or not he's ready for this.
All right.
That's what I think. But I'm excited to see him. And we're going to have to wait a couple weeks. But you're right, Mitch. It is Tua time in Miami. A little surprised that he is the third quarterback, rookie quarterback, to see time. I just would have assumed he would have come before Herbert, I guess. Obviously, circumstances for Herbert is kind of how he ended up in the starting spot.
No one saw that one coming.
But well, we will see Tua by week 8 in the NFL. So, Mitch, speaking of that, we should get into our quick picks here.
Yes, we should.
Do you want to go over this last week a little bit?
Yeah, I'll go over last week. So last week, me and Dallin, we had a little bit of a down week. I was 8-6 in the picks. Dallin is 6-8 last week. That was a little bit of a down week for us. Right now, I am at 66-25-1 for the year. Dallin, you are at 56-35-1 for the year. But bad weeks happen. We move forward, right? Because we're going to have a good week this week.
That we do. Yeah, you know, sometimes it be like that, though. Sometimes you go 13-2. Sometimes you go 6-8. You know, it is what it is.
It happens. It is what it is, my friend. Let's start on Thursday night. The New York Giants, they're leaving the Big Apple. The Big Apple. That's how I said it last week, so I think we just go with that. The Big Apple to head over to the city of brotherly love to take on the Philadelphia Eagles. This, my friend, is garbage game of the week.
Yes.
Correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Hit it, Mitchell.
This is just hot garbage. Straight hot garbage. You're a garbage person.
Yeah, this game's just bad. This game's just bad. But you know, this Giants team just come off of a narrow win over the Redskins. This Philly team, they got to turn the corner at some point. I just feel like they got to turn the corner at some point and at least get kind of close to 6 wins for the year. So give me Philly in this one.
Yeah, Mitch, this just, this just continues a run of just horrible Thursday night football games. And we had, and what's sad about this, right? We saw Miami, Jacksonville. We saw Denver, Jets. Okay, we get this game. We should have had Kansas City, Buffalo last week. But then that one doesn't actually even become a Thursday night. We've got to watch that one on Monday because of COVID and moving games around.
At 2 p.m.
At 2 p.m. I was watching it Monday afternoon just thinking, this just feels wrong. But like even the best Thursday night football game they probably scheduled all year was Kansas City Buffalo. It doesn't even get played on Thursday night because Thursday night is reserved for shitty matchups, and that's what we got here. I went with Philly as well because they are, Mitch, if we've learned anything from the beginning of this season, it is that Dallas and Philly are definitely the best two teams in the NFC East. It's just not that by that much. But I think we could safely say Dallas and Philly are the best two teams in the NFC East. Would you agree? Competing for the division title, no doubt.
Sure, I guess. Yeah, they're the two best in the NFC East.
Just as we assumed in the beginning of the year, we just didn't know they would be a combined 3-8-1. You know, we just didn't see that coming.
God, but that division's so bad.
Yes, give so me bad. Philadelphia at home on Thursday night. Mitch, my Carolina Panthers looking for a bounce back win. After the tough loss to Chicago, traveling down to New Orleans, Nolens, where it was announced today 3,000 fans will be in attendance at the Superdome for this game. Big win. They haven't
Let's
had
go.
Fans yet in New Orleans, so they'll be there. I hope to see some Panthers fans in the stands. Give me the Saints in this game. This is a tough draw for the Panthers. I think they're going to be competitive. They've been competitive in every game this year. Expect the same here on Sunday, but give me the Saints in a win.
Yeah, I like the Saints as well. I think that 3-2 record, they had some tough weeks without Michael Thomas there. Defense had some lapses as well. They had a tough draw against a pretty good Oakland Raiders offense a couple weeks ago, but this team bounces back to 4-2. I like the Saints as well. Next up, Buffalo. They're coming off the loss to Kansas City. 4-2 Bills are headed over to play the 0-6 New York Jets. Jets aren't winning a game this year. Gimme Buffalo. Simple as that.
You know, God really comes through sometimes after a trial. He gives you a blessing. After a tough stretch of playing the Titans in Kansas City back-to-back weeks, the football gods come through and give the Bills the New York Jets. What a blessing. Joe Flacco and Frank Gore are the starters on a football team in 2020, Mitch. What a time. Give me the better of the New York teams, the Buffalo Bills, on the road. Mitch, AFC North matchup here. Cleveland looking for an opportunity to bounce back after an embarrassing divisional loss to the Steelers. They get another divisional matchup. Joe Burrow, Joe Exotic, the Tiger King, and the Cincinnati Bengals. A matchup of the worst cities in Ohio. It's clearly Cincinnati. We all know it. Unfortunately, people have to be there this Sunday for that game. But give me the Browns and a chance to bounce back and right the ship after what was an embarrassing loss to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I like the Browns getting a bounce back game as well, getting back to 5-2. Look, Joe Burrow's been just fine. I don't want people to look at the record of the Cincinnati Bengals and pin any of this on Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow has been just fine. But Cleveland Browns, they're going to dial it back a little bit, get back to what their identity truly is, like we talked about last week, which is creative and ground and pound. I like the Cleveland Browns in this one to bounce back, get to 5-2. Dallas, they're going to leave the Lone Star State and head over to the nation's capital to take on the Washington football team. I like the Redskins in this one. I'm going to take the Redskins in this
one. The
who? Oh, boy. That's a flub.
The
That's
who?
That's a big flub.
The San Diego Chargers? The St. Louis Rams?
Nope, the Washington football team.
Hey, the WTF.
I can't do that. That's not okay. That's not okay. My apologies. The Washington football team. I'm taking them. Let's just move on.
Give me Washington in a comeback victory, leading them down the field. Quarterback Alex Smith. That would be fun. Listen, the NFC East sucks, and I just don't want to pick Dallas because they look awful. Washington's got to get a couple wins this year, right?
Yeah. I don't hate this team.
No doubt.
I don't think they're good. I don't think they're good, but I don't hate this team. So
foundationally, they've got some pieces in the right places. Quarterback's not one of them.
Good.
But, yeah. You know, defense
front
line,
is pretty good.
Wide receiver, Terry McLaurin. I mean, he's a stud.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was a big win. So, anyway, yeah, we both take the WFT. Mitch, Green Bay Packers. This is another, opportunity after a tough loss with an easy matchup on board. We saw it with Buffalo and Cleveland. Green Bay taking on the Houston Texans. Romeo Crennel and the Houston Texans, who blew an overtime game to the Titans this past week. Give me Green Bay. This is pretty easy. Houston's not good. Green Bay is not going to drop two straight, and they're surely not going to drop one to the Texans.
Yeah, I like Green Bay as well in this one. A big chance for them to bounce back and just light up the Houston Texans. Give me Green Bay. Easy pick here. Following that, is this another candidate, Dallin?
You know, we could just give it to Thursday Night Football. I think it deserves it, especially because the Thursday night slate is just always so bad.
Yeah.
And this is just another case. But this is not a good game either.
No, an honorable mention, I guess.
There you go.
For
yeah.
a garbage game of the week. The Detroit Lions, the 2-3 Detroit Lions, are heading over to Hotlanta to take on the Atlanta Falcons. I guess in just a coin flip, I'm taking Detroit here. I'm taking Detroit. Not really rhyme or reason why to it. I guess they just feel like the better put together team right now. And this Atlanta team just feels lost. They feel like a kid that's lost in a Costco and can't find their mommy. Like they don't know what their identity is. They don't know where they're at. They don't know what they're doing. It just feels like a lost football team right now. At least Detroit knows where they're at, and they know they suck. So at least give me Detroit here.
Sure. Shout out to Atlanta for getting their first win of the season last week. And they looked good, but it was against the 1-5 Vikings, and Kirk Cousins definitely helped them out by throwing 3 interceptions. So I don't know how good Atlanta is. They're not good, I could tell you that. Neither are the Lions, but they're probably better So I agree with you here, Mitch. I took Detroit, not because I think either team is good, but because I think they might be slightly less sucky. Mitch,
yes.
This is probably the best game of the week. This is definitely the best game of the week.
I think this is probably game of the week. Yeah.
It's a matchup of 5-0 teams. Pittsburgh Steelers traveling to Tennessee to take on the Tennessee Titans. We mentioned this game before. Big game for both teams to prove that they're legitimate contenders and that they're about this life. Give me Tennessee in this game in what should be an incredible game. And this was kind of a coin flip for me, too, to be honest. I don't really know what to do.
I think this is going to be a really fun, really close game. Hard hitting. I mean, this is two very good defenses playing against two very good offenses. This is going to be a juggernaut of a game. I'm going to take Pittsburgh in the slight edge here. I just like what this team has been able to do, even with sometimes lapses in offensive production. This team has just been able to hold themselves afloat on defense. But then also the offense steps up and gets it done when it needs to get done. I think they'll do that this week against the Titans. Give me Pittsburgh in a close matchup. Following that, Seattle. They're leaving the Emerald City. Seattle. They head down to the desert to take on the Arizona Cardinals. Seattle's got to lose a game at some point, Dallin.
I mean, they don't have to. But
I know Kyler Murray did not look good last week. He was 9 for 24 passing, but he had the best 9 completion performance probably in NFL history. Give me the Arizona Cardinals over the Seattle Seahawks at home.
Well, I mean, that would be a big win for Arizona, looking to keep afloat in this division race and also maybe put their name as a legitimate playoff contender. I'm going with the Seahawks here because they haven't really given me a reason to think that they're not going to pull through. And Arizona has looked good and not looked good at times. I think that's to be expected as for what we see as a wild card playoff team. You know, 9-7, 10-6 team. I think Arizona is well on their way to that. But give me Seattle in this game. But this is another good one. And it should be close and a chance for Arizona to prove some legitimacy here. Even without a win, a competitive game against the Seahawks would go a long way for them in that conversation. So I'll take Seattle at home in the NFC West. Seattle on the road in this NFC West matchup. Mitch, an AFC West matchup. Kansas City coming off the win against Buffalo on Monday night, taking on Denver, who got a much-needed win over New England. Cam Newton and the Patriots. Denver's not going to repeat that this week, Mitch. Give me Kansas City on the road.
Yeah, Kansas City, easy pick. Yep, that's all you got to say about it. Easy
yep,
pick.
It.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, that's it. Following that, Jacksonville, they're leaving what, Dallin?
The Swamps of Jacksonville.
That's right. They're leaving the Swamps of Jacksonville to head over to the City of Angels, that new SoFi Stadium, to take on the Los Angeles Chargers. Another honorable mention for Garbage Game of the Week.
Yes.
But I am going to go. I know Justin Herbert's got to get a win at some point, but give me the mustachioed hero, Mr. Gardner Minshew, to get a win on the road in Los Angeles. I'll take Jacksonville.
I like it, Mitch. I like it. This was a tough one for me, if I'm being honest. But give me Herbert in his first NFL win here at home. This will definitely be his best opportunity. So I think he's going to come through in this case against what is a very bad Jacksonville Jaguars team. So I'm gonna take Herbert and the Chargers to finally pull through.
I respect it.
Following that, Mitch, a team that I mentioned earlier struggled. New England coming off by some COVID cases. Cam Newton back. Offense not good. 2-3. They're going to be hosting the San Francisco 49ers. Had a bad loss against the Dolphins. Bounced back well on Sunday Night Football against the Rams. They're 3-3. They're looking to continue the streak. But I don't see New England dropping another game here. I think Cam's going to do enough to get a win here at home and not start a losing streak. Give me New England.
Yeah, I like New England in a close matchup. San Francisco obviously has been banged up and probably 3-3, not fully reflective of how talented this team is. But even fully healthy, this team hasn't played exceptionally well. New England did not look good offensively, but I think that this San Francisco 49ers defense is still just banged up enough for them to have a little bit of a rebound week. Give me New England at home. And plus, the Patriots at home, tough to beat.
So, yeah, and no Mostert. Mostert back on the IR for the Niners, and that's a tough blow. I mean, he's been incredible when he's been healthy, but he just hasn't been healthy this season.
Right. So you're relegated to Jerick McKinnon, Jeff Wilson, and Tevin Coleman should be back soon. I doubt this week, but he should be back soon. So
no doubt.
Following that, Tampa Bay, Sunday Night Football, Tampa Bay. They are leaving Tampa Bay. I tried to get too creative with that one. But there, we are going to have a swashbuckler showdown as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are headed over to Las Vegas to take on the Raiders. Battle of the Pirates, a swashbuckler showdown. Tampa Bay looked pretty good last week against Green Bay. I love this defense. I think the Raiders are a good team. They're just not quite there yet. Give me Tampa Bay on the road.
All right, Mitch. In a rematch of what, the 2003 Super Bowl?
2002.
I thought that was Rams-Patriots. 2002 season, though, right? 2002 season.
2002. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so yeah, it might have been played in 2003.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yes. 2002. But a rematch of a Super Bowl, the very first Super Bowl I remember watching, Bucks-Raiders. I'm going to take the Bucks here. I think they're on a good run right now. I think the bounce back from the tough loss to the Bears was, that was a big statement win over the Packers. I think they continue it here against Vegas coming off the bye week here. Raiders have had an up and down start to their season, 3-2, some big wins, some tough losses. They've had a tough road. It doesn't get any easier with Tom Brady and the Packers coming to town. But I'm going to take Tampa Bay in this one. And following that, yeah, Mitch... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, John Gruden, obviously one of the coaches in that Super Bowl. Can you tell me the other one? The head coach for the Raiders in that Super
Bowl. I cannot.
That would be Bill Callahan.
Yeah. Probably should have known that.
And didn't even change the Gruden offense, so Gruden knew exactly what was coming the whole game.
That seems like a bad strategy. I don't know. I'm not a genius. Dummy. But it seems like somebody could have told him not to do that.
Yeah,
Mitch,
not a good one.
Monday night, your Chicago Bears heading over to the city, not the city of angels, Mitch, the city that Ingles the Wood, Inglewood, California, and SoFi Stadium, the true home of the Rams and the renters. The Los Angeles Chargers. This is going to be a good Monday night game, Mitch. Give me the Rams at home to get the win.
Yeah, you know, Inglewood, always up to no good. I believe that's how the phrase went in that Dr. Dre song. But no, it's Tupac. Sorry, Tupac did that one. Look, the Rams are a great team. They're a great team. This Bears team offensively has struggled. It smells wrong. It looks wrong. It tastes wrong. But it feels so right. You gotta be crazy if you think I'm not taking my Bears. Bear down. Let's take the Bears on the road in Los Angeles.
Wow. And no one is surprised. No, but this should be a good game. You shouldn't be. And an opportunity, I mentioned this earlier, but an opportunity for the Bears, if they want to show, like, hey, you know, like, we're legit, we'll go get a win on Monday night on the road, and the Bears could prove in a week, like, hey, you know, we're about this. We're real. Good matchup for both teams, no doubt.
Oh, absolutely.
So, Mitch, that's it for our picks, buddy, and that is it for the podcast. We appreciate you guys sticking around, hanging out with us this week, as always. Always a good time. We appreciate those of you that interact and follow us on social media. If you don't already, Instagram is at the Sports Hour Guy. Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys. My Twitter at Lil Thoint. Mitch, where can the people listen to this podcast?
Yeah, you can listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to get at us on Anchor. Leave us a voice message. Come be a part of the conversation. Get on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review, tell us we suck. That is the only way we can get better.
That is the only way, Mitch. The Dodgers are up 8-1 at the end of the sixth. The World Series,
let's go Blue,
is already over before it began. We're doing this for Dick Graff. He's been waiting since 88 for a World Series. We're doing it for Dick, Mitch. We're doing it for Grandpa Dick, man.
We're doing it for Papa.
For Papa Graff. It's a great time. Guys, it's been a pleasure. I just want to say how grateful I am to do this. It's so much fun. I look forward to it every week. It's fun to have sports back. It's fun to talk with you here, Mitch. Even when I disagree with you, even when you make me mad, even when I get a little testy, it's because I love you, buddy. It's a good time.
I feel the same way, man. I love you too, buddy.
Guys, thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next week.
See ya!